listeners of the Mad Scientist Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, here with my co-host, Marie Mayhew. Marie.
Oh my God, Cox. What? I am surrounded by crystals.
What an exciting
time. I'm in my healing center.
What an exciting time for all of us. This episode, we're talking about crystals. Woo! It's going to be good. This episode, we are talking about crystal magic. It's a fun one, and one that has really been a long time coming. We've been poking fun at crystal magic since episode one, basically. But it's really not a topic we've ever delved into in any kind of full way, because it's one of those topics that, like, sounds silly, but when you dig into it, there's different ways of looking at it as, like, a tradition or a type of magic or a cultic practice. Like, there's like for every religion there are a different way of using crystals or thinking about crystals, like magical properties. So it's got a super long history. It's very, very interesting. And I'm super excited to get into it. Marie, get out your moonstone and carnelian because we are going in.
I'm centered. I'm ready.
So centered.
I am so not centered. If it is one thing our listenership should know about me. I'm not centered.
Not centered.
I am that top that is wobbling like there's no tomorrow and it's just going to shoot off somewhere at any given time.
So one of the reasons we wanted to do this episode, besides Marie just being like ready to explode with magical energy at any given point in time.
Woo!
So Marie and I both, you know, we're young, we're hip, we're into what the kids are into these days. So we have started watching, I think the kids call them Tiktoks, T-I-K-T-O-K.
It is the Tiktok. Yes.
Yes, TikToks. So we wanted to do this topic because we actually, Marie and I, in our daily lives, have a lot of people who actually do enjoy and like kind of believe in the crystal stuff, like crystal magic and things like that.
Yes.
We also have a lot of listeners who, you know, either have like YouTube channels where they talk about kind of their magical practice and their kind of like spiritualism or kind of religious beliefs. So like Olivia Graves, who follows us, does the Witch of Wanderlust YouTube channel, which is really cool and a very interesting kind of look at, again, kind of like magic and those sorts of practices in the modern age. We also have listeners who look at this from like the archaeological perspective or more of a historical perspective. Mm-hmm. There's just, you know, a lot of people who listen to this believe in this stuff. And so although we do think that, like, obviously, you know, the person selling crystals in Sedona, Arizona on peyote, that is hilarious. We also recognize that unless that's your mom, in which case, apologies. We also realize that there is a side to this that people take seriously and find interesting. Yeah. And the history of it is very, very interesting for us.
Yeah. Just because we're snarky buttholes does not necessarily mean that we're right.
Exactly. Yes. That is the most important thing.
And I think that just like anything, just like any cultural event or any religion or anything else, there's extremes and there's also ways that people take advantage of it and profit off of it, right? So if you have a belief and a spirituality that helps you kind of govern your life and is your, you know, sense of navigation in the world, fire up. Like, that is awesome. And as long as you're not hurting other people, keep on keeping on. I think it's when the accoutrement that go with spirituality start to come with an exorbitant price tag is when I'm a little like, okay, hold up a second.
It's literally the moment somebody thinks, hey, I could charge somebody for this.
That's when it becomes evil. Of every given day, pretty much. Right? Like right now, there's somebody out there going, holy smokes, I'm going to make a million. And you know what? They are. And there's just nothing you can do about it. It's true.
Yeah. Speaking of, listen to our ads and pay our ad sponsors, please. Anyways.
We're not those people.
No.
That's the other thing. Chris and I will never be those people. Probably not. I know. Well,
use promo code MAD at whatever. The Marie, sidebar. The number of companies who are like, hey,
yeah,
you're a fat, hairy guy. You should advertise for our ball trimmers. Is through the roof. It's through the roof.
Well, why aren't we getting in on big ball trimmer money, dude?
I don't know.
Why aren't we?
Okay. A lot of the inspiration for this episode came from a book that I got called Cunningham's Encyclopedia of Crystal, Gem, and Metal Magic by Scott Cunningham, which on the front of the book tells you very helpfully it includes a 16 page color insert. Super fun. Mm. This book I actually picked up, I believe, at a bookstore in New Hampshire. And it's interesting. It kind of goes through some of the ideas here and everything else. But so before we kind of get into specific stones and stuff, what do we mean? What do we actually mean here by crystals? What do we mean by this topic? So, you know, really the use of crystals for like different magical methodologies or practices goes back basically to the beginning of human civilization. You know, if you walk through a gemstone exhibit at your local natural history museum, though, it's really easy to see why these sorts of objects might be considered holy or spiritual or, you know, just divine, not necessarily of the earth.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they are
truly awesome, right? Like, you see something that big and it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, they're
big size ones.
They're not only that, they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they're unlike most things you would see in your normal natural setting, right? If you think about before we could do things like, say, metallurgy or chemistry or anything else like that, you know, these objects capture the light, it looks like. They diffuse it in different ways. They strike. They're very striking, I should say, when sunlight hits them. They're very hard and they're extremely durable. They seem to be impervious to, like, heat or cold. If you throw a gemstone into a fire, it doesn't decay or soot in the way that a lot of their objects will. And they're found hidden within the earth itself, deeper than most other things are than you would normally find. So they're rare, they're beautiful, and because of that, they're hoarded, they're traded for other commodities, and generally are just thought of as having a link to the divine, because again, you know, if we think about like
the symmetry in them, right? I mean, like many of them are so beautifully put together.
That is another really important point. They seem to kind of grow naturally in symmetrical fashion as well, which we're going to talk about in a moment here on why that happens. They're so unlike everything else you see that it's thought they have to be divine. And if we think about, you know, the kind of original religious practices, we think of them as being about light or darkness, right? Or the stars and the sun and the moon and these other things. And so these are objects that seem to shine with the same brightness or have that same kind of quality. So it's a very interesting, I think, kind of anthropological thought process of why these things are interesting. But anyways, let's get into though. Okay, we're talking about crystals and stuff. What the hell is a crystal? What is a gemstone? What is a mineral? What are these things?
Jace. No idea. No idea about that. I know that they're mined. I have a whole other segment on that, bunch of information on that. But I have absolutely no idea how they're formed or why they are formed in such symmetrical, geological kind of fashion.
All right. First off, Marie.
Yeah.
Right? We got rocks.
Got the rocks.
Okay. Now, a rock is just a kind of a catch-all phrase. It's any naturally occurring solid material. All right. So it's like minerals, and it has to be mineral or mineraloid. So like, you know, like a tree is solid, but it's not a rock because it's not made of inorganic material.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
A rock now, is not a living thing.
Right. Now, a mineral is a solid compound that has a regular crystal structure and a regular chemical composition. Okay. Now, what does it actually mean? So a crystal structure is the particular arrangement of atoms in a solid shape that repeats over and over again to make up a bulk material. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about like normally we think of the term crystal as just meaning like any pretty rock, right? Like any pretty thing is a crystal, but mm-hmm. that's not really correct because it's not really based on the way that a rock or like a solid thing looks. It's actually based on like, it's again like an atomic arrangement. And because of that atomic arrangement, because of the, it's called like they're periodic. So they repeat in a period, right? So like mm-hmm. a good example of that is like you have, let's say like salt. Salt is NaCl, right? It's sodium chloride. And so sodium is Na and chlorine is Cl. Mm-hmm. And so in a salt crystal, the way that it's arranged is it goes sodium, then chlorine, then sodium, then chlorine, then sodium, then chlorine. And that pattern happens in all cardinal directions off of a central sodium atom. Does it make sense?
Yes. So it's so forming sodium, around it in a
yeah, so the sodium, yep. The sodium can bond like up, down, left, right, and then backwards and forwards. And mm-hmm. it bonds in all of those directions to a chlorine. And then each of those chlorines bonds in each of those directions to a sodium.
It's not random.
It's not random. And that's what right. we mean by being periodic, too, is that if you, therefore, you know that next to every sodium has to be a chlorine. And so it doesn't matter how many periods away you go, you know that next to a sodium is going to be a chlorine.
Dig it.
Okay. Interestingly, though, like something like, say, glass is not a crystal.
No,
because glass has a random pattern. It has no crystal structure to it. And that's actually why glass like shatters so easily mm-hmm. is because it's a completely random chemical structure. So according to the International Mineralogical Association, who takes this very seriously, Marie.
Yes, they do.
Minerals have the following properties. OK, they must be naturally occurring substances formed by natural geological processes. None of your fake diamonds. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
they must be a solid substance in natural occurrence. So that's like normal temperature, pressure, whatever, except for mercury, because it got included before they made up all these rules, because they're just rules made up by nerds and they don't mean anything. The material must have a well-defined crystallographic structure and it must have a fairly well-defined chemical composition. Now, that last one's kind of interesting, right? Mm-hmm. So, okay, so that's what like a mineral is. So everything we think of as like a crystal generally are minerals. Okay. Some things aren't like mm-hmm. obsidian or onyx, mm-hmm. like isn't really, it's a type of glass, but like whatever. Now some of the other things that make minerals so interesting is, they have like, so different chemicals can take on different crystal structures. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So a good example of this, Marie, is carbon.
Yes.
Right. So carbon. Oh,
yes.
Uh-huh. Can make diamond, but it can also make graphite.
Okay. Isn't that insane? Like, okay, keep going.
It's super interesting. This. So diamond yeah. is extremely hard. It's the hardest material we know of. Has all these other interesting properties, and graphite is so soft that we use it for pencil lead because it smears.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the difference there is that diamond is all carbon atoms arranged in a tetrahedral crystal structure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And mm-hmm. graphite is carbon in sheets, like two-dimensional crystal sheets that then have water like or something else between them.
Yeah, it's just like flattened out, and the other one is
an actual like
dimensional,
three-dimensional yeah. structure. Yeah. So
why is it that we can't? Well, we kind of now we can, because we know if it's periodic and we know how the atoms are structured. Why can't we manufacture that?
We can. We do.
We do, right?
We do all the time. Yeah,
we do all the time now, right?
Yeah. So like industrial lasers and stuff use like sapphire as like a tuning material. Yeah. We make industrial diamonds for things like saw blades or for drilling machines.
Right.
So we can make them now. The So this is actually kind of an interesting one. The the difference is, well, not really the difference, I guess. Like, let's look, like, think about like ruby and sapphire. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ruby and sapphire are actually the same mineral. They're corundum. So both of them have as mostly a chemical structure of Al2O3. So they have two aluminums and then three oxygens.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the repeating pattern that happens, is the aluminums are bonded to these oxygens. The only difference between ruby and sapphire is the inclusion of impurities. So ruby has chromium atoms occasionally replacing aluminum, which gives it the red or pink color.
Uh-huh.
Right. So it's like about 1% of aluminum is replaced by chromium to make rubies. Sapphire, though, is basically like it can be almost anything that replaces it. Like it can be like iron, tantalum, iron, titanium, vanadium, chromium, magnesium, like a whole bunch of other stuff can replace aluminum to make a sapphire to make like a blue color. So then when people grade these minerals or like look for them to see if they're, you know, like real or not or whatever.
The quality of them.
Sometimes what they're actually looking for are like imperfections. So like for rubies for sapphires, they'll look for like star rubies or star sapphires.
Right.
Which those ones.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, so like those ones, they're like not actually clear. Like a ruby or a sapphire you make in a lab, it's, again, you're like making a very, very well-ordered crystal structure. So like generally they'll be kind of, you can make them like clear. You can kind of change the properties.
Mm-hmm.
But on these ruby, on these natural ones, what they do, or what happens essentially, is there's like, the crystals when they grow can have like, all of the imperfections can actually get like, stuck in one area because so it's kind of like you know how like with metal when you're doing, well, maybe you don't know this, with metal, like when you're hitting iron with like a hammer or like a blacksmith's or whatever, what you're actually doing is you're like distributing the carbon better, so you're like actually like you're actually like diffusing the impurities out, right? With gems, like with other solid materials, the same kind of thing can happen. And so on those stars, it's like impurities that cause that like star pattern to happen.
That's so cool.
It's super interesting.
That's so cool. And as a pop culture reference, shout out Steven Universe. If you've watched Steven Universe, you will have it. Like, they do a really beautiful job of talking about gems and talking about how this actually happens in science, but also sort of a social commentary with it. Excellent show. Everyone should watch it.
Yes, it is very cool. All that science stuff is kind of interesting. Yeah.
It's very interesting. So, but here's just really quick. So then why, if we can make them, right? We can make diamonds. And if you have enough technology and enough lab, you can make them of a certain size. So why are they so expensive? Why are they still so in demand?
Marketing, Marie.
Marketing. Because people are bad.
Because we are dumb.
Because we are dumb and people are bad. Like, that's really kind of what it comes down to, though.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is some minerals are really, okay, we can make minerals, right? Like, there's actually, there's like YouTube videos where people like make sapphires and rubies at home.
That's so cool.
And like,
we should do that.
We really should. I really cannot wait to have a house with like a garage so I can do that.
I have a garage now, dude. I'm not doing it. You know what? I'm after this, I'm setting this up out there and we're just doing it.
Send the summary. What's interesting is there's also like, there's historical precedence to this too, right? Like the alchemists, like say like Cagliostro or what's the guy that like Astonishing Legends really likes? That's like that alchemist that, supposedly like had made, you know, he could make rubies and sapphires. Like, there's,
oh, of course, the
Saint Germain, Saint Germain,
the Count of Saint Germain. Yes,
there's fabulous. Like, there's some theory or thought out there that like they might have actually been making synthetic rubies and sapphires. Like, it's not, or they might have been making like other similar like gems. Because it's really hard to tell the difference, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing too, though, that we haven't really touched on is like when ruby and sapphire grow naturally, they have a crystal structure, but it is not the crystal structure that we see when you like buy a ruby at the store. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. from like cutting and polishing and everything else. Well, yeah, so that's the other thing too is, you have to like
manipulating the stone.
Exactly. The like you have to
into something.
Right. Yeah. You have, you're actually like artisanally like
stuff, yeah.
fastening it and creating it into something. So it's a bit more complicated than like what we're talking about, but like I like have bought, I bought a bunch of like garbage sapphires and rubies and stuff just because I find them interesting. Like I seriously did. I, like on Amazon, you can sell, you can buy them for like $30. Like a, you know, you get like 15 sapphires from India for like $30, or whatever.
And again,
they're probably just made in some kid's garage.
We're going. They're probably glass. No, they're not. But we'll go into like again the socioeconomic ramifications of doing that. But yeah, I mean like. If you look online, if you look at Etsy, if you look at your Amazon, you can buy big bags of this type of stuff for relatively low. Like the one I like is, what is it? It's labradorite.
Oh, labradorite. Yeah.
Labradorite. I think it's beautiful and it has so many different colors. And it's like, I think jewelry that's made out of that is remarkable. Like one of my favorite things is like, you know, going to the Natural History Museum's exhibits for gemstones and stuff like that. Because it is really impressive, especially when they're so huge and they're in these natural formations that are so amazing.
Oh, it's super cool.
Like you said, you can see how they are inspiring something that is sort of otherworldly about them.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, well, so the other part of their like otherworldliness mm-hmm. comes in the use of them for magic. Right. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so what do we actually mean by magic? Or like, what
do
you
mean
it?
By magic?
What
do you actually mean by magic?
So magic, again, mm-hmm. is one of those terms that means like a million different things to a million different people. Mm-hmm. Generally, though, when you're using a stone for magical practice, what you're doing is, or what the general idea is, I guess, is the stone has some link, some natural emotive power that mm-hmm. it has. Mm-hmm. And so by you channeling that same emotion or something that requires that emotion through the stone or with the stone, it can help kind of amplify or focus what you're trying to do, right? So like a lot of the times magic, the way that it's described kind of in like the Western tradition is it's personal will focused to a height of power to make something
object.
Happen.
Yeah, through a physical, some kind of physical object.
Yeah, so right. it's like why, you know, in like, say, like Satanism or some types of Satanism, whatever, mm-hmm. the idea of magic was like, you would go to these like big power, you know, you'd go and dance like crazy and scream in this room and whatever. And that mm-hmm. emotion, the kind of raw anger, whatever mm-hmm. emotion you had, that is then what would kind of shoot your mystical goo to the energy or whatever, or the universe, right?
Which is still the same as a bacchanal with Dionysus from the ancient Greeks.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes. So it's always kind of like your emotion or your mm-hmm. thoughts hit a pitch of inevitability almost. Mm-hmm. And then this object is like focusing that inevitability and helping you make it make something happen. Yeah, so like if you go ahead.
Question. Lot to unpack. Question. So what you're basically saying then is Gwyneth Paltrow is a witch.
That's the kind of funny thing is like if you take like the most
Kim
basic
Kardashian is a witch. No.
Yeah, 100%. No, absolutely. Like if you take the most basic,
there's something really that I would buy that. I would buy Kardashian's got some sort of hookup that is like,
well, if you
dazzling all of us with some kind of glamour spell.
If you take the most like basic definition of magic,
I'm just being glib. I know very
no,
not,
but seriously though, like if you strip all of like the bullshit like window dressing away from it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. The idea has always been that like there is a link between the physical and the mental realities.
Yes.
And so just like you can imagine, I can imagine that, you know, when I was a kid, I would think that I was going to be a scientist. Mm-hmm. And, you have to do something to make it happen, but still the thought, like that the motion of the thought, the kind of push to make it happen and seeing it in your mind and recognizing that it could happen, you could then make it happen. So in some ways, like, magic has always just kind of been like, it's kind of like fake it till you make it. Mm-hmm. Like, you just, like, it's like dress for the job you want, not the job you have, sort of.
Interestingly enough, you are not alone. The Pew Forum organization believes, they're the ones that do all of the polling information and statistics, say that 42% of Americans hold some type of, or much more of them hold some type of New Age belief, but 42% believe in something that a physical object can hold spiritual energy. And 42% is kind of like a good percentage of people.
I mean, I would argue if we didn't make it say to them like it was a New Age belief or a spiritual belief, like that's the big,
it would go up.
Exactly. Like most people have still beliefs or thoughts like this because I think it's a very, it's
really quick, it's the Pew Research Center.
Pew Research. Okay. Pew Research. So that's, but that's like, if you think about even say like in Christianity or Catholicism, right?
Yes.
The host, which is part of the Eucharist, that is like supposed to be, the priest is imbuing it with magical properties.
Yes.
By the blessing.
Eucharist is just like a perfect example of this in a lot of ways.
It is. Yes. So, and it's the same thing with like lighting a candle for someone and then praying for them at a church, or having an image of a saint in your home, or even a cross, right? The idea is to have this object that focuses your religious fervor or your belief.
Or a mandala, right?
Exactly.
And I am focusing my meditation into an object, right? So I think I can see that. I would buy into that. And I think, as soon as you can say, but like, I think when you start to, I won't say recently, but I think when you start to talk about crystals within, the last couple of centuries, it is lumped into something called New Age belief, right? I mean,
absolutely. Yeah,
that's
for sure.
Sort of, and a New Age belief is somewhat different than like your traditional religious group, right? Traditional religious group has a much more organized foundation. A New Age belief has much more of like an individual spirituality. That's how I would kind of loosely categorize
it. I think so. But for example, like, so it feels like it's kind of a New Age or like a more modern, not more modern, but it feels like something that we don't
co-opted.
Yeah. Like we don't normally think of it as being like part of say like Judeo-Christianity. Yeah.
Right.
But it actually has a super long history there. And actually, that is what we're going to get into a little bit when we come back from the break. So, like we said, there is kind of a modern day thought that this is like a new thing, that like crystal magic is becoming hot again or whatever. Not that it's a new thing, but that it's like this is something counter to like Catholicism or counter to Christianity or I don't know, Marie, what do you like?
I love when you're like this.
What do I mean, Marie?
Oh, what do I mean? Well, I think just like Constantine co-opted the existing beliefs of the people that he kind of conquered, right?
Mm-hmm.
You inevitably will, any religion has some type of part of the past religions are part of the symbology that they've co-opted into their own belief structure, right?
Yes.
So even if I'm New Age, I'm Gwyneth Paltrow, I'm shopping on Goop for the $80 a piece, vaginal egg crystals or whatever they are, right? That didn't just hatch out of nowhere, right? The idea, even though it is like really far-fetched and gets a lot of press and is really humorous, it's like those ideas are rooted from other beliefs. And that's why I think that's what kind of can also make them you know, can make them carry through. That doesn't mean that that's like, but that's just Christianity or Catholicism or whatever in a different cloak. It's that the idea of a physical object having a spiritual property, I want to say kind of universal.
Yes. Okay.
Is that close?
Yes.
Did I even come in within the realm?
Yes, no, that is super close.
Right.
Okay. So, all right. So, yeah. So, I think I exactly like what Marie said, but I said much worse. This idea of, like, we think of crystals as being something that was never co-opted or never part of Christianity, but actually has a super long history in it. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, one really good example of that is actually salt. So, reading here from this book here, right, says salt, energy, it's receptive. Its element is earth. Its deity is Aphrodite. And its powers...
popcorn.
Its powers are purification, protection, grounding, and money. It's like a super common Christian thing. Yeah, like salt protects you from demons and all that other junk.
Well, yeah, and you throw salt over your shoulder, right?
Exactly.
You spill it, you throw it over your shoulder.
Yeah. Salt has always been used in like folk traditions and whatever.
You're not doing that with pepper. You're not doing that with cayenne. No.
You're not doing that with pepper.
You're not doing that with pepper.
The other interesting thing with crystals, or I guess kind of with these sort of gemstones, is if in the first like book of the Bible, in Exodus, we hear about the high priest of like the temple. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that priest is wearing a very specific outfit. Right. Mm-hmm. So the priest wears like a whole bunch of different kind of stuff. But so they wear a turban, a belt, a tunic, trousers. Right. So these are like special ceremonial outfits. But then they also wear a apron. Right. Which is called the ephod, which is this sort of like it's a special apron that's got different like types of gold and other materials weaved into it, but then also a breastplate. Now, the breastplate is really interesting because the breastplate is made up of, again, sort of these special fabrics, but then also has 12 precious stones set into it.
Huh.
And in each of those stones was inscribed the names of the 12 tribes of Israel, and each was supposed to go to a story or a reason for this tribe having this, having this specific thing.
Stone, yeah.
Right, so the names were things like, the tribe of Levi had carbuncle, Simeon had pras, Reuben had ruby, Judah had emerald, Issachar had sapphire, Zebulun pearl, Gad crystal, Naphtali had turquoise, Dan had like an amber, Benjamin jasper, Joseph onyx, and then Asher was chrysolite. And so some of the reasons are things like, so for example, Reuben is said to have sinned by changing the bed of his mother and his father's concubine. So the red
Don't be
color,
doing that. Don't be doing
it's
that.
It's a very biblical kind of thing. Like your dad already had a concubine. It's like, why are you doing it? Whatever. So the red is supposed to like, the red Saving is supposed
that
to
for another episode for a therapist, whichever comes first.
The red is supposed to represent like Reuben's shame at having said this. So like each of these stones has an associated emotion, right? So yeah. Reuben's was mostly with shame or embarrassment.
Yeah. None of them are particularly light, right? None of them are like happy go lucky.
No, so Simeon's gemstone praise PRASE. It's the tribe sinned and their faces turned like a deathly green pale color. And that's the color of this gemstone.
Yeah, none of the gemstones are like the gemstone for whistling.
No.
Or, you know, or humming happy or skipping or whatever. No. Or just lollygagging. There's the gemstone for lollygagging. And that's right up there on the breastplate. No, man.
Yeah, it's super interesting. So like. A lot of them are like this same kind of story, right? And the tribes of Israel are coming from like Joseph. So like, if you've ever seen Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat or like heard that story or whatever, it's those are the brothers that become the tribes of Israel,
right?
Right. So,
And they're serious stories, right? They've got some gravitas to them. But if any of our listeners know what the gemstone of lollygagging would be, please let us know.
Yes, please do let us know. So it's super interesting that they have this kind of like connection here. And actually part of another part of the breastplate were these two things. And we don't really know what they were, but they were called the Urim and Thummim. Urim and Thummim. And they were basically these, like, they were connected to the priests, like, they were basically, what's the word? They were on the priest's, like, his robe kind of thing, but it's not really like a robe, it's kind of like a turban, I guess I would say, more than anything. So it's like the apron thing, right? So, like, if you look at, It's like a shawl, I guess. I don't know how to describe it, Marie. Anyways, the ephod. So what this had, they were these two
heavy. This is a lot of weight.
It sounds like a lot for the Middle East to be wearing.
It's very hot.
But so supposedly what these things were. So Urim and Thummim are like normally translated as being like lights or perfections or the perfect lights. And so it's supposed to be like a physical abstraction of God's judgment or God's thought. And so the idea was like the priest could ask into these objects something. And then the whatever these things were would then give back an answer from God.
Ooh, okay.
And so they're kind of like divining stones almost.
Interesting.
But actually a lot of, again, crystal magic today talks about like you can like scry into the stones, right? Or they will give you an answer. Yeah. Or you can have them hanging on rods or whatever, like, or on chains. It's a super interesting thing. And so one of the other ones, it's very similar to like in Latter-day Saints mythology. They talk about like Joseph Smith having a special object that he could kind of look through to read the stone tablets.
Yes. Right.
So the idea was that like these objects, these crystals could allow you to like know when was this actually God's divine belief or prophecy or whatever. Yes. And when was it just bullshit?
Yes. You know, I will put in a quick plug here. My mom has a crystal on a pendulum, right? And she'll hold it on a stone she'll hold the stone and it's on a chain or something and it will start going one direction or another. I cannot vouch for its validity or even what it's made out of, nor will I make fun of it because she'll mark us down in stars. But I'll say that, like, I mean, that type of you're using it as a translation device, right? I mean, you're basically getting an answer or... it's translatable information from the mouth of God or from the will of God or the voice of God or whatever it is coming through something to give you some kind of guidance. I think is kind of, again, it's like it's a physical object that is this prism or this medium for which you're able to understand a greater divine power.
It's just it's kind of a very interesting, like,
which I can get, like, why that's, like, I can get, you know, again, that's sort of the history of it. And I think the foundation of it. I do think, however, that those things can get exploited. And those things can also get blown out of proportion, just like anything else. And I will say, like, I do feel like the most recent bout on TikTok was kind of a good example of that in some ways. Which is, you know, I don't know if we're ready to discuss that yet or not.
We absolutely are ready. Let's go into it, Marie. Let's do it.
Well, like the whole, I can't remember the stone's name, Moldavite, right?
Oh, Moldavite. Yeah, something like that. Moldavite,
right, which is a green color and really was coming up, you know, people on TikTok, were saying that they had Moldavite earrings and they lost one of them and then their mom got cancer and then they got in a car wreck, right? And it's like, you have these sort of videos of, or, you know, you have these clips, these TikToks of, like, you know, hysterical young people, you know, really upset because this happened to them, right? And it's like, and naturally, you know, instead of it being sort of this, you know, this prophecy of warning, you know, like the plague upon all your houses kind of thing, it's selling out everywhere, right? Amazon can't keep it in stock. The price of it is going up and people want it more, which again is like, do I think that, like, you know, they're talking about the properties of the stone, and when it touches your skin, you can feel it vibrating and you have this, you know, this dizzying sensation. And it's like, scientifically, that stone's not going to do that to you. That just does not have the properties to do that, right? So it's like, is it psychosomatic? Is it something else? Maybe. Are you communing with a stone? Okay. But I think that there's something about, like, I'm not gonna judge someone's experience, you know, even though I sound sort of snarky when I talk about it, I'm not gonna judge someone's experience that they've had with some object, right? Because I didn't have that experience. However, I do think the one thing that people should be more aware of or should be thinking about are that these are stones, these are minerals, these are rocks that are being mined in places, including in, you know, in our United States, that are not necessarily coming from ethical sources.
No.
Right? It's like the majority of this stuff comes from Madagascar, you know, and it comes from, you know, incredibly impoverished environments. And, you know, we'll post some links to some articles that basically your healing crystals are coming from places that, you know, that don't even have drinking water, that don't even have, you know, that have definitely don't have any kind of infrastructure. People are living completely below poverty, but are mining these things, you know, as sort of being sold from a multi-billion-dollar industry. Like, that's the other thing that kind of threw me, that really was revelatory in this research, was like, holy smokes. Like, I knew that sort of, again, like, quote unquote, the new age, you know, had some capital behind it, but crystals alone are a double-digit billion-dollar industry year over year.
It's like that episode of South Park where Stan's grandpa is buying stuff on the Gem Shopping Network.
Yes.
And so he buys it. So there's a whole series of it where it's like, it shows like they go, Stan and like Carbon and them go to India. And they go to like one of the places where there's like, you know, thousands of people making this crappy, cheap jewelry. And they're like, well, what the hell? Like, you know, stop it. And the kid's like, it's not me. Like, I'm not the one that's I don't make money off of this way. Right. And Stan's like, well, then how the hell do people make any money on this? And so then it just goes into this whole like, it shows like, you know, OK, so the gems are like gathered in India or whatever. They're gathered in these poor countries. People are paid like sweatshop labor prices to make the jewelry. Mm-hmm. It then gets shipped over to the United States where it's sold on these like either these crazy TV stations or on Amazon or whatever, these other garbage places where people are just selling it. It's like, you know, whatever, they sell them for super high prices.
Or crystal, you know, like, again, like gemstone, you know, at your fairground, right? It'll sell at your fairground, and then you go in and there's just trays and trays and trays and trays and trays.
Right. And then it's like, and then eventually all of that stuff gets sold back to like, it gets, you know, in the episode, it's like, then that jewelry gets sold to the cash for gold places, and then they just send it back to India. And then it gets back to the United States to be sold to people's grandparents for marked up prices, which is like partially true. But like in this case, you know, mining for gemstones is really bad for the environment.
Oh, yeah.
It's super unsustainable and shitty.
You talk about like, you know, your blood. What is it? Your bloodstone diamond, right? Or whatever it's called. Like, I can't remember. What's the term? The blood.
Blood diamonds.
Blood diamonds. Yeah. Oh, just blood diamonds. Duh. But I mean, it's like, yeah, you know about those, but you don't know like, oh, my, you know, my rose crystal or whatever is like, no, they're coming from someplace. The bigger and the more extravagant they are, you know, the more some other country is getting pretty much raked over the coals for them. It's just like, you know, and again, like there's this weird, again, I'm going to make a huge generalization about like, well, there's a tie-in about like your connectivity to Earth, right? But this is a connectivity to where these things came from, and that's the power of it you're harnessing to really have a deeper understanding. If it's not through God, it's sort of through Gaia or Mother Earth or something. And it's like, yeah, no, none of that is really the case. And if you're researching these or buying these, you know, look at like the most ethical way of making that investment, or grow them yourself.
What's actually really interesting is I watch a lot of YouTube videos that are, my YouTube viewing habits are pretty specific, Marie. They are.
And now Korean, we're all going to learn about them. Yes.
Yeah. So they are either Korean news channel does story about animal in person's home. So it's like either a fat raccoon or like a cat or like something like that. That's like, I'd say that's like 25%. It's video games being speedrun. That's 25%. Oh, yes.
Excellent.
And then recently, a pretty big chunk, I'd say like 50% recently, has been people digging for gold or gems in the wilderness. That is cool.
There is out there. Yeah, I mean, like, that is something that is out there.
But even then, they're talking about how, like, this is pretty bad for the environment. You can't have the runoff here from this going into the river, because it'll dirty it all. And it's like, and this is like people with like their kids going out there with like buckets. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like this is an industrial process. Like, this is still like a one person or like maybe a family operation. And they're, you know, but again, it is like a hugely, there's some of these where the guy's like, he's chunking off pieces of stone. And he's like, this is like a $60,000 stone. And it's like, that is the ugliest stone I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, are you kidding me, sir? So, I mean, I think that's the other part of this, that you can have it with like a connection to nature, like you're kind of saying. You can do it in a way that is sustainable and kind of interesting and everything else. But the ones like with the Moldavite, that is it's formed by a meteor striking the earth.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen that often.
No. So it's like a limited, that doesn't happen that often.
These are limited resources by definition almost.
Yeah.
So it always creates this situation where it's like you are, not that it's unsustainable, but like, because you, again, we can make these in a lab now, you know? But people don't want to buy it from a lab. People want to buy it from like, they want someone to have found it or whatever.
Right. Which, again, I think that is, again, another one of the mythos, is where you're buying it from is some sort of guru-esque property to it. And it's like, again, it's like, I don't know. I think that is just something that maybe should have a certain amount of scrutiny to it. Right. Like, again, however you feel you're communing with whatever it is that object is cool and it's your business. However, you should also be aware of like who is making a profit. And how sustainable is that profit, and how ethical is that venture, right? Doesn't that on some cosmic level negate what you're doing, right? If you're like, you know, invested in having a communion with Gaia, or a communion with like, you know, using this thing to open yourself up through Mother Earth. And basically, you find out that was because, you know, it was done through basically a mining company, you know, in Madagascar, where they don't have drinking water and they're like severely below poverty level. And it's basically forced labor. I mean, doesn't that negate some of that?
Yeah. Marie, I got to say, I saw Madagascar, the movie, and you are not describing it accurately.
I know.
Those animals seem much happier than what you're kind of describing.
They like
here.
To move it, move it, Chris. Yeah, that's what I took away from that.
That's what I
they
thought, Marie.
They like to move it, move it. I guess they just like to also exploit it.
Exploit it, oh God.
Not as catchy a hook. I don't know why.
Not as catchy. Your point is well taken. I mean, I think it's interesting, right? It's sort of like the, again, I'm pulling out one of my few Star Wars references. Don't they have to like find the crystals that go into their own lightsabers?
Kyber saber. Yeah, they have to find Kyber saber crystals. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they do.
I played, there's a video game that came out where like you play as a Jedi, whatever. It's called Jedi Fallen Order. It's very, very good.
Yes. Fallen Order is excellent.
Really good.
Oh my God.
And so in that, you have to like go to find your crystal for your lightsaber. Yes. And you like you feel like the crystal like calls to you. Right.
Yes.
I think there's something to be said that if it, again, like what you're saying, Marie, doesn't buying it from somebody like I like in Harry Potter, it's stupid, but like the wand chooses the wizard. Right. Yeah. Like you can't get that connection on Amazon. You can't get that connection on like buying it from an influencer or whatever. Like,
right.
It seems to me that if again, if you're going,
yeah, like make money off of that.
Like if you're going to, if you're going to like find a piece that speaks to you or like makes you have that kind of feeling or that you're going to use for your spirituality, it seems to me like it should be something that you like, not that you find, because that's also kind of like a like stupid gatekeeping of like religious or spirituality or whatever, but like it is kind of an interesting dichotomy of like,
yeah, it's something you should just be aware of. That's all. I mean, like, you know, again, like I'm not gonna tell you not to buy stuff from Jeff Bezos or from Gwyneth Paltrow, but you know, I just think it's just one of those things where, you know, it comes into question. You should at least consider it and think about it. And maybe, honestly, hey, maybe there's a rock or a mineral in your backyard that's, you know, just as effective.
I would love to hear from our listeners who do the crystal stuff.
Yeah.
About this one for sure. Yeah. Cause like, again, you know, well, all we know about it is the little bit that we do know. It would be fascinating to hear from somebody.
Great.
And kind of how they use it and what they think it does for them and everything else. I mean,
and there's probably sustainable ways of going about it too. Like, I don't doubt that. I just, you know, I think if you're looking at sort of the mass, like going on Amazon to purchase it, that's, you know, but we would love to hear that. And again, you know, what is the gemstone of lollygagging?
Listeners, we love you so much. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Mad Scientist Podcast.
Ow.
Good stuff, Marie.
Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at madscientistpod or at teamgiantsquid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Because we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard. And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Damn It Chippy production.
We're such butts.
Here we go. Okay, we're good.
Excuse me, burping.
Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so